Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters engage today's top thinkers from around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas you can put to use in your personal and professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, Close Up Radio digs deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. Close Up Radio, where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
Thanks so much for joining us, everybody. We're live worldwide on Close Up Radio. It is a pleasure to have you here. It's also a pleasure to continue our exclusive series with the award-winning Dr. Vatsala Sastry. You know, she was inspired to become an infectious disease doctor so she could help people live longer lives free of pain and diseases. And she emphasizes how a simple vaccine or drug could mean a lifetime of freedom from illness, as well as infections, can be absolutely cured with a proper diagnosis. And her lifelong mission is being able to help patients live healthy and successful lives. We have a lot to talk about on the show. She's extraordinary. She's highly revered and highly acclaimed, and she's been working in the world of infectious diseases for decades. She's a leading expert on it, and she's been very busy because of everything that's been happening, you know, in the health and wellness and medical and news communities with all the crazy stuff that's been going on of late. But, you know, there are other infectious diseases that are looming, of course. It's, you know, just the way the world works, and so to be prepared, and she's a big believer in prevention. You know, she really believes an ounce of prevention, you know, is worth a pound of cure, and that is so true. We've got a lot of wonderful things to talk about on the show, emerging infectious diseases, things of that nature, but also she has an exciting announcement that she just told me seconds ago before we went live on the air that she's now, in addition to being, you know, a noted physician, she's also a teacher, which is quite exciting as well. Let's welcome her back, live and direct from Florida, Dr. Vatsala Sastry. Dr. Sastry, welcome back to Close Up Radio. It's a pleasure to have you here, and congratulations on now being a teacher, too.
Well, thank you very much, sir. It is an absolute honor and a pleasure to be here with you, and thank you for all that you do, and thank you for allowing me to communicate. I appreciate it very much. Yes. It is really wonderful to be able to teach. The more senior I get, all I do is I think about the young residents that are there, and all I want to do is like teach them and tell them everything that I know in the past and all the cases that I've done, and it just feels so exciting. But the only thing is I've got to start reading, wear glasses and start reading.
That is funny. That's what happens, right? And how do you have time?
Right,
because there's
absolutely
so much going on. You know, we've been talking about emerging infectious diseases, too, which I know isn't something that maybe people want to hear because we're dealing with so many things now, but it's better to be prepared. Can you define emerging infectious diseases?
Absolutely. At every time that passes, maybe a few years this way, a few years that way, if there's a tremendous change in the water that comes down, and then the heat and the temperature, different viruses and organisms grow, and they constantly want to do that. But our body is just amazing. The human body, it has developed to this level. As we talked about, our immune globulin profile is our military. It's strong. It maintains us. But whenever we have changes all around us, dear, we have to be extremely careful and we have to watch. Now, typically, that doesn't mean that we be negative on a regular basis. This is where the IDSA and the CDC steps in. And the NIH. So all they'll do is they just keep going, but they keep watching constantly. And they keep looking at all the hospitals and what are the extra infections that are coming up. And they observe very, very carefully. If they start seeing an increase, they communicate between themselves. They talk. They walk. And immediately the CDC goes out there. They go out there and try to diagnose that infection, and they make a full analysis, and they come up with it. And then they'll turn around now to come out to the public and to communicate through the government. You know, they have to do it in a very correct, simple, perfect way, which they do anyway. But that's what they do. So they constantly are watching, and if something is minimal or minimized, then they control it. But if it is a little bit bigger and it's beginning to spread and it's a little harder to control, then they immediately come out to the public and they do it. And that's what I really amazed about the NIH, the CDC and the IDSA, they just will dress up in their clothes and they just get out there. If they see more than 2-3 unusual infections, it doesn't matter. They will get out, and the government takes care of it. They send them out. They have to make a diagnosis. They do extensive research, and they come up with it, and they all communicate with each other, and that's what they do, which I think is really amazing. And that's how they control. They control to be honest, this beautiful United States is the one that does it so perfectly. And I have tremendous respect for that. And that's how they were able to observe about this COVID, the rate and the spreading process. And we got the vaccine done within a year. And any other multiple illnesses, like the Zika virus that started from South America, my goodness, in Florida we had few cases. And immediately, you know, the CDC and the NIH got on it. And they were able to figure it all out. And they figured it out that it tends to come, again, through the birds and through all of them and certain bugs that are around the area. So they analyzed everything in Florida because we just had two cases there. Two cases. And that was amazing. This husband and wife, I did extensive research on that too. They were poor things. You know, they had one child, and the second child, as they were pregnant and came out, she suddenly had fever, chills, and they couldn't figure it out. But they knew that there was a heavy case of the Zika virus. So they analyzed her, and poor thing, she did have it. And they said, oh, my goodness. And they tried to do whatever they could. But more importantly is the CDC analyzed the entire surrounding area. And they were able to find the bugs and the birds. And, you know, frankly, they had to talk to the government, this, that, and they figured out how to get rid of that. And so, you know what? It completely stopped the amount of cases. We only had 2 to 3 in Florida, and that's it. So just look at the wonderful job that they do in controlling these spreading illnesses. And, you know, frankly, they say, that's my job. That's what we do. That's our job. We'll do it. And they do a very good job.
That is so amazing, it really is, to have those experiences like that. What are the risks of emerging infectious diseases from your perspective, Doctor?
Well, of course, you know, being an infectious disease doctor, that's all we look at. And I will tell you, I may see 50, 60 patients a day, but it just depends on the weather and the season. We tend to see different kinds of things. And when we look at it, I mean, if it's one illness, it's kind of okay that we can control and do this. But if it is something that is spreading and 2, 3, 4, 5 cases start turning up, then immediately we have to act on it. I'll give you another classic example associated with COVID-19. And I spoke with the nurses and I spoke to everyone today. What I'm quietly noticing is a lot of patients are being admitted, fevers, cough, mild shortness of breath. You do the chest x-ray, you do the CAT scan, and you see mild infiltrate and a little bit of patchy irritation. That's, you see it. Then the white count tends to be on the low side, and the liver functions are high. But this is the unusual part. You do the COVID test, it's negative. So, and then I talk to each of them, and I document all of it. Bulk of them, 96% of them have vaccines. So then I talked to the nurses and everything. I said, you know, I really believe it's some kind of weird Omicron or some variant or something that's doing this. That's why when we're doing the COVID, it's negative, and the vaccination already, so their body and the immune system is good, but I do believe it tends to mildly attack them. And then within 2-3 days, we just isolate them. And within 2-3 days, they slowly start feeling better, and then we discharge them. Now you see what I'm saying? We still have not had the capacity to make a diagnosis of that. So whatever it is, if someone has more and more and more, then we do it. Now, you know, when I was young and I was learning all about it, there was this powerful ID doctor. I was a professor down in Miami, and he did extensive analysis, and he was watching. And after that, even I started to observe this, that, again, based on the time, et cetera, you suddenly have a large amount of cases, and then it kind of goes down. Then you have another amount of cases. And so, for example, he described that in certain areas in Miami, streptococcus in the blood and streptococcus everywhere. And he says, my goodness, where did this come from, you know? So all these bugs are all over the place. And then he was observed, and then he started, again, concentrating on that other unusual thing. What time? Where? What's the temperature outside? What are we exposed to? Why are we having this? So we're slowly doing this kind of analysis. And the other thing, I'll give you another example. Like, for example, C. diff colitis. We take a look at it on and off. Some have it, and then suddenly there's 3, 4, 5, 6 cases, and then it goes down. So, and you know, the gastroenteritis, the nausea, vomiting, the diarrhea, same thing. So that's what it all does. And all we do is, and we will talk about this, is how we try our level best to maintain our health to the best that we can. And that will make the biggest difference.
That's amazing, too, that those COVID tests were coming back negative, huh?
Yes. And when you look at it, it kind of looks similar to that, but and the patient is just suddenly short of breath. The patient never had any shortness of breath. The patient doesn't smoke cigarettes, is not exposed to anything. So you're just trying to figure out, like, And then, by the way, every time any patient comes in with that kind of shortness of breath, we do order, in addition to the COVID, we order influenza, mycoplasma, legionella, and we try to get a sputum culture and blood cultures if possible. And then we just sit tight and wait. And it takes about 2, 3, 4 days, you know, to get the results back. And then we can kind of make answers. So that's the one thing about infectious disease we're taught. Any patient comes in and they're sick, you have to order all these things so you can figure it out and know what it is.
How about travel-related infections? You know, as the people are starting to travel again and airline flights and everything going on, are travel-related infectious diseases on the rise from what you've seen?
Yes. So there are two issues we can talk about traveling. So the first issue is the plane itself, right? So the plane, you're sitting on a plane. For example, if you go to Asia, you go to Australia, you go to South America, you know, it takes like several hours to get there. And when you're going there, of course, that's a little bit of exposure of that. And remember, even tuberculosis way back then, they had brought that up on that one. And my goodness, so that means, you know, about the mask and the vaccine, all those issues. So anyway, irrespective of that, so you could be exposed to that. That's one thing. And then when you travel, you always go with people in a bus, or you go in a nice ship. And so there's a little bit of exposure. That's one thing. The other issue that comes about is that when to the area that you go to. And, of course, when we all travel, where do we like to go? We like to go beautifully all around the world and see wonderful things. So you go to Africa, you want to go to those huge zoos, you want to go to all those big places, you want to see animal after animal because, you know, it's definitely worth it. Or you go to Thailand, you see all those gorgeous, again, animals over there and elephants and stuff. And so but for the bulk of the time, we kind of do okay. However, if any of us have some issues, like if some people have cancer and they're taking chemotherapy, their immune system is down. If you're a diabetic but not under very good control, or don't mind me, I don't mean in any disrespectful way, but maybe too thin or a little obese, those kind of things. And if we smoke and tend to drink a little extra, then we tend to get a little exposure. So that's it. So we have to just be a little bit careful at that time. But yes, so we are definitely exposed to that. Yes.
That's amazing to realize that. How can travelers then reduce their risks of disease?
I will tell you this. And this is what is really fantastic about the world and the United Nations and all of it. And, you know, of course, our military is absolutely the number one on that one. So anytime we get to certain countries, certain areas, we know, that's what's so beautiful about the government. They take a look at it and they say, okay, so you're going to go to where now? Where are you going now? Africa? Okay, so let me see now. Tick, 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 you could be exposed to these through 2, 3, 4 illnesses. Or are you going to, say, Asia, any Asian country, China, or you're going to Japan, or you're going to India or Thailand, then you could be exposed to this. So let me double check. And then they write all of those, and then they come, they come, even for me, I get phone calls. Yeah. As I have traveled to all those places, and we get phone calls. So once we know that, then we do it. And they say, if you're going to that area, then we would recommend. They don't, I mean, not too many, maybe one or two. And they'll say, listen, this, and they get the analysis of that country. At this time, they have more cases of this, more cases of that, and we just want to communicate and let you know that we would recommend a vaccine. And by the way, you do know, right, like when you land at other countries and you get down, they will ask you, and they will ask you to show them your vaccine. You do know that,
yes.
Right? So and if you don't have that vaccine, you will have to stay in the airport. Yeah, They will not let you get out. I have observed all of that, and to me, I'm totally comfortable with that because I feel normal with that. But you know, this is where infectious diseases is very important. That we, our key is to help others, and you know, put it in a nice way and help them, and make them feel very comfortable with it, and not be strained about getting a vaccine or getting this kind of treatment, or take some oral pills or something, so you're not exposed to anything. But we have to, you know, allow people, and that's our job, to communicate and to talk to them about certain risks and tell them that if you take care of this, you will never have any problem. This particular vaccine, this particular pill doesn't bother you at all. We think you're going to be okay. What do you think? Because at that country, this is what is exposed. And, you know, when you talk to them the right way, the patients are really, the citizens in this country are so wonderful and caring, and they want to travel all over the world, and they will agree. They will go ahead and do it. Yes.
That's amazing. That's, you know, once people do realize it, then they'll roll up the sleeves and participate. Do you think that the U.S. could face another wave of COVID?
That is possible, and it is occurring. So, you know, we had the Omicron, the B1, B2, and we'll just watch down the line. But as an ID doc, when we sit and think about it, you know, it's like about 2-3 years, we're approaching the third year, we suddenly think about the history of the viruses and everything way back when. Remember, we didn't even have vaccines. We didn't even have a treatment like remdesivir, dexamethasone. Back then, there was nothing. Somehow or the other, people made it. And we do know that the body somehow strengthens itself with anything it's exposed to. So we're hoping and praying that down the line that we continue to improve. But yes, sir, we can. I do believe that a different kind will keep coming, and we are all very interested in that. We want to see what happens this year at the winter time, next year at the winter time, the next year at the winter time. And we just want to really see and watch and see what we can do about it.
What have we learned from the COVID-19 pandemic? What are some key takeaways so far for you, Doctor?
You know, I will tell you also something else. I have come across some different physicians who, as you have too, in the public and in the TV, you've come across that, who might not recommend the vaccines. And I really believe that, you know, our board and everyone, with some comments should be made on that one, because you cannot say the not right thing to the patients, because your entire job is to say the right thing. So I really, really believe in that. And I believe the physicians, you know, it is very nice if you just sit down and communicate. And when you keep doing that, when you spend time and it's your patient and you talk to them nicely, I'm telling you, they turn around and they listen to you without a doubt. And you have to see, you have to explain it properly. You have to speak about the risk. You have to show them all the points. And, you know, we do talk and communicate now on a regular basis too. And also, of course, the CDC and the IDSA, yes, of course, they try to talk and they try to communicate and everything. And, you know, everyone, our government, our president, everyone, you know, they should be with it and communicating with it, and help them to come and talk and listen and do it, because that's all they do, the IDSA and the CDC and the NIH. That's all is their job, is to just to do this work to prevent the country from getting any kind of harm, and to continue to improve us. And so that communication has to be there. And I will tell you, the citizens do listen, sir. They do listen. I watched on TV constantly. And, you know, like even a couple of years ago when there were so many bad cases. And it did come up nicely on the TV and then on the news. And then they said that we told them to get the vaccine, and he said no, and he got it, and he came in. And the poor thing, when he was looking very sick in the hospital, he did say, no, I think I made a mistake. I should have gotten the vaccine. See? They do understand.
Yeah.
So I think that teaching should be good. Yeah.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Yep, absolutely right. And you're on the cutting edge of it all. What about how concerned we should be now with influenza? That sort of took a backseat COVID situation.
Absolutely. You know, the one thing with influenza, which is really incredible, everybody gets a vaccine. You know, towards the, like in Florida, we have a little bit more senior people, and everybody, even young ones, they do tend to get it. And they really, I will tell you, above 95% get influenza vaccine. So when this COVID came on, what we did notice, oh, the COVID was much more dangerous or rapid and totally take down the body, whereas the influenza fortunately doesn't do that. And once they get their vaccines, they may just get a little mild cough, cold, and a little this, that, influenza, that's it, very mild version, and it improves. But, yeah, it is better, though, and we, without a doubt, even during this time, the COVID, you know, you get the two vaccines, you get the two boosters, but the influenza doesn't change, sir. People still, they are recommended to take it whenever the winter starts coming. It's all over the place, and all the medications are available to everybody, and people do take it. They really believe in it. They really do believe in it. And influenza typically doesn't affect bulk of people to that degree like COVID does, without a doubt. Maybe one or two or three who have real major illnesses tend to get a little bit of sickness. So, yeah, influenza still goes on. And you know what? We are all infectious disease believe, and of course IDSA, what they say is that just like you take your influenza vaccine, COVID is going to start really going to be coming once a year.
Yes,
once a year.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
maybe for another 5-6 years. And right. Now, you know, look at this other fascinating thing, the polioviruses. Remember that? All the children, we took it for, I would say, about 60, 70 years now. And then slowly it started backing off because, smallpox and everything, we kind of never got it. But just take a look at it. Monkeypox starts increasing. And based on the water, et cetera, in New York and New Jersey, unfortunately, I'm really concerned about that. The population, the young little babies who are just born recently has not taken the vaccine, somehow in the water. And, you know, that's really fascinating. So it kind of slowly backed off on the polioviruses. And there was nothing wrong with that. Throughout the world, it has backed off. Smallpox virus, all that, it has all backed off now because we didn't have that many cases. Everyone, the whole world controlled it. And now the little kids, there was one kid actually did extremely badly, and apparently they thought there was only approaching almost 500-600 cases. But those people actually fortunately did not get very sick, but that one kid got very sick. And immediately, that's all the IDSA needs, one case. They immediately did extensive research, and they already found a lot of things. Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing. It really is. And when you really think about it, you know, on a direct level like that, it's incredible. What are ways then we can protect ourselves from some of these illnesses? Wash hands, wash hands, wash hands, like our mother used to say.
I will tell you that, you know, this is a very unique, unusual, rare case, but I will bring it up. Because that's how, you know, as a student, I finished everything and I started practicing. Oh, my goodness, I was all out there, you know, trying to do it, take care of everything. And it wasn't even a week when I started practice. And then there was this one person, like I was walking by and it was in the ICU and just was talking and everything, but then within 2-3 days got intubated, and I was still not on consult, but once he got intubated, immediately they called me in, and I went there and took a look, and I said, oh my goodness, so I had to do extensive research, and he's only 42 years old. And then when I looked into the research, he's a person who used to do all the year things, you know, and my mom, actually the year, that was his office. So I was like, oh, my goodness, oh, my goodness. So I said, I want to talk to the family to figure out what happened. And then, see, the thing is, remember, I'm just a young one starting for the first time. I'm taking a look at it. I said, oh, my goodness, okay, what could it be? So you order a bunch of cultures, titers, and, you know, already he's been here for 3-4 days. Nothing is coming back positive, but the lung is way worse, and he's a bit of a heavy smoker. And so what were we trained to do, sir? We have to look at the history, and we have to figure it out, right? So when I went in there, I said, okay, if the regular culture is coming back negative, I want stat, fungal cultures, viral cultures. I ordered everything. And I said, I really need to check it all. And you do have some, you know, very nasty fungal infections as well. Aspergillus and there are many others. And I said, I'm just a little bit suspicious, but let me. Then I went and talked to the family at great length. And this is the one wonderful thing, you know, that even trained me even further. he's a very hard worker, and he was building like a new house, etc. The poor thing was underneath the ground, kind of sort of. I mean the house was a little bit on the top, and so he was under the ground doing all kinds of work. So now you know immediately what is he exposed to: the ground, and the grass and everything. And he was working there for like 2 weeks. And then when he comes in, slowly after that, and the poor thing's a heavy smoker, got sick and everything. Unfortunately, had a bad outcome, and I was the one that requested the autopsy. And they said, no, we can't afford it. I said, no, I don't care. The hospital will pay for it, or I'll pay for it. We have to figure this out. But irrespective, I did get the answer, and I had started treating him. So he grew extensive aspergillus throughout the body, sir. It's a fungal infection that completely, and I had my professors as well, with whom I just had been speaking to 2-3 weeks ago. I called both of them, and they said, wow, what a case. I said, it's just unbelievable. I said, yeah, I put him on amphotericin B. Yes, I immediately started him on it, but what else can I do? What else can I do? They said, well, all you can do is keep trying. And then, you know, in the autopsy, I just came to realize, and I don't mean anything negative this way, but it was throughout the body, every piece of his body had it. So, you know, so what I'm trying to say is that's the thing, that if we go and we're exposed to heavy water, we're exposed to heavy ground, we're exposed to this, I think it's kind of a good idea to wear some kind of a semi-mask, you know, or just cover ourselves to some extent and you know, be a little bit more careful. But then again, take a look at this. I mean, so many people in the world, they do work beyond work beyond work, and they're exposed to everything, and they actually do well. So sadly, some patients tend to do a little bit worse, you know, who have a little debilitation. And yes, that is always a bit of a risk. But bulk of people really tend to do well on that. So there you go. So just that's one particular type of thing. And these fungal infections are all over. And I'm actually supposed to teach fungal infections. And that's just absolutely incredible. And throughout our country in different areas. You know, like, for example, in from Arizona, we have coccidioidomycosis, and a little bit South Florida, and especially down, we have blastomycosis. And we have cryptococcosis in New York because of the birds. So now you see different areas. Yeah. And then you have histoplasmosis in the middle. See, but this is where our head has to work. And we ask, where are you from? Where are you from? We expose this. That's how we do it. So that's one amazing thing about the infectious disease is how we have to do it. We have to do it. That's what we're brought in for. And then we look into it. And then, you know, I really think it's wonderful to sort of teach the public too. And they're also very smart. And the nice TV teaching and the nicer video teaching, everything, Google, they can all read all of it. And then once they recognize that, they get smart. And sometimes I talk with patients, they're smarter than me. They come and tell me, hey, doc, I got bit by this, and, you know, we were in this area, and it was this organism. I said, what's the name of it? And they'll write down the name for me. So see, well, you know, all humans are just super, super smart. Yeah.
That's amazing. That really, really is. This is fascinating. I can't wait to continue the conversation. We will be back next week, and we have a lot more to talk about. One of the main things, you know, we've got like a minute left, but take care of yourself, right? Eat healthy, exercise, and look out for yourself.
I would like to tell you about that real quick. We'll talk a little bit more next time, but I will tell you. And I'm 62 years old. You've seen my pictures. I do my Taekwondo.
No way.
And, and then everyone, you know, the darling Americans told me that you have a piece of Indian blood. I said, no, but I'm totally American. They said, how about yoga? So, you know, and the America is the greatest. They take out the beauty in everything they see around the world, and they encourage it. So, you know, in this wonderful country, we have our regular exercise and everything, which is fantastic. In addition, there is yoga, because why? So you can bend the body, because that's the one good thing about it, and you can lift 100 and just keep exercising. And you can be asthmatic, you can be this, but it's the style of exercising, and you move on yourself. And I'm like, my gosh, wow, that's fantastic. So basically 2-3 things I have noticed, and don't worry, I have to lose some weight too, but it's how we maintain our health. Right, it's how we maintain our weight and then maintain that gentle exercise. And that what we can talk about next time, what I really believe is that all our wonderful beings, the ideas or whatever, but just in general, people, you know, for anybody above 60, 65 are special. So for those people, I mean, you know, and I talked to so many patients and they said, oh, yeah, we're retired, we have money, so now why can't everybody take care of us? I said, yeah. So, you know, we can have a wonderful, I'm not saying like a beer garden, but it's an exercise beer garden. How about that? So for all elderly people, right, why not? Why don't they have a pool area? Why don't they have a delicate running area? Why don't they have all those kind of things? And that would make a fantastic stretching back and forth. And I'm telling you, that makes the difference. Because you could be healthy, you could have no problem, but if you just absolutely don't do any kind of exercise down the line, year by year by year, as it passes, you tend to get this, you tend to get that, the body acts odd. But when you, irrespective, you keep doing delicate exercise over and over and over and eat certain right things, somehow your body behaves better. So I really believe that we need fantastic businesses out there who help, you know, and physical therapy, my goodness. You have terrific physical therapists, and they're just unbelievable.
Yes.
So we need all of that.
That's so important, isn't it? It's so absolutely important. All of that is.
Yeah.
Another amazing conversation with Dr. Vitsala Sastry. She is absolutely extraordinary and always so inspiring and open and authentic. Dr. Sastry, thanks so much for joining us here on the show. Looking forward to our conversation on Tuesday the 20th, that's next Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern. Lots more to talk about and share with our loyal audience listening around the world. Best of everything to you for the rest of this week till we meet again next week, Doctor. Always a pleasure.
Thank you so much. You make me so feel so good. Thank you very much, and thank everybody for listening. Thank you.
You are very welcome. You take care and enjoy the rest of your day. And thank you for listening, everybody. Our very special guest, infectious disease physician, expert, extraordinaire, the one and only Dr. Vitsala Sastry, joining us here live and direct from Florida with some very important commentary and analysis and advice. And I think it's always incredible when she joins us here on the series Close Up Radio. For all of us here, thanks for joining us. You have a terrific day. And we'll be back momentarily with another amazing guest right here on Close Up Radio. Till then, for all of us, have a terrific day. Bye for now.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television, Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.